You're listening to Not Many of You Should Become Teachers, a podcast that explores the world of K-12 education as it intersects with the Christian faith. You might call us extreme moderates. We're skeptics who try not to be cynics and are allergic to cheap rhetoric. Welcome to the show. Welcome back. 12th episode of the third season here, but this must be episode 40 or something along those lines.
4-0, here we are.
Yeah, which is an interesting place to be, like, and actually just, and I think I'll talk about this, just off mic, we were talking about a little bit, like, as you go through 40 episodes, I think in different ways than maybe other edu podcasts might, like maybe you hit highs and lows within your, you hit highs and lows within your educational practice too, but sometimes you never have a feeling, I don't think you ever have a feeling of hopelessness, or you know what, maybe you do, maybe there's more parallels here, but like, I'm realizing that just recently, like, and over the course of 40 episodes, I haven't felt quite this way, but like a little bit of discouragement, like just within spiritual formation, just stuff that's going on in Christian schools and whatnot.
Which I think is probably helpful for some of our listeners to hear. Like, yeah. we sort of the cheery champions of this stuff. And there are more days than I'd probably like to admit where it's like I'm driving home kind of deflated or frustrated, right? Like, it's right. Just to be honest about it, right?
Yeah, from a plethora of things, whether that's like purely educational or like exclusive, like in the realm of spiritual formation, yeah. Which can be, and for some reason that feels more discouraging. I don't know why.
More weighty.
Yeah. I think it's the shoulder weight thing. You know what I mean? Where we feel like we're responsible for so much as Christian teachers in a Christian school, whether that's faith retention or whatnot, where it's not like on our committee meetings, and sometimes we talk about this, that actually, if anything, we should be lifting the weight off the teachers a little bit and recognizing that the home plays a role as well as the church.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. To whatever extent, even some of that burden is maybe artificial, or that it shouldn't even be there, but yeah, man, we feel it.
And what bothers us is in that moment really just is a moment in one of these students' lives. Like maybe I'm thinking of something that may have happened or whatnot, like, and we feel weightiness, but for them, it may have just passed by and been like, oh, that's just second of my life.
And conversely, you know, put it the other way, there's going to be, we just can't know the moments that are going to be the aha or the, you know, the light bulb or this powerful moment that a student's going to carry with them. Like, you can plan certain things and think, well, this might be sort of that climactic, or this is sort of the thrust of the lesson, or this is the key point I'm trying to drive at. You can plan that to a certain extent, but you don't know what a student is going to be taking with them. And so, I mean, not to over-spiritualize this, but maybe the language of faithfulness in our practice.
Yeah.
Right? Of just, you know, a lot of that posture is just showing up and doing, maybe I'll put it this way, doing a solid lesson is itself a spiritual thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just being there. Mm-hmm. And you were mentioning off mic too, just what are we doing well, right? Like, is a relational component.
Yeah. And we have these small victories, right? Like I can even think within the last couple of weeks, like, well, we're going to talk about chapel, but we had one chapel that was a real highlight for a number of reasons. And I had a number of conversations with students that were deeply relational and deeply formative as well. Like we really struck a chord in our conversation and what it is that we were talking about. And yet shortcomings or frustrations are so quick to cloud over any small victory that may have taken place. So here I am.
Yeah, the perspective for sure.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
But in that light, we're going to, I don't know, is brag the right word? It's not brag, but just like, we're going to share a little bit about
showcase, cool moments, highlight.
Showcase some cool moments from, well, in your context, a high school chapel, mm-hmm. and from my context, a middle school chapel. And would you say that this is like a standout thing, for the year so far, like it's a highlight, or is it just
maybe
one of many?
It certainly is a personal highlight. I mean, to go back to what we were saying, you know, maybe students would perceive it differently. I would, you know, would like to think that it stood out to them. But yeah, for me, this definitely was a singularly impactful moment in our chapel program.
That's a good way to put it. So maybe you could unpack a little bit as to what took place in that and yeah, just what happened.
So full disclosure, I was mildly involved in shaping what took place, but the only reason that I will brag about it, because it's not actually about me or anything like that, is I set I view it like a trajectory. I set something in motion, and these student leaders took it, and it became a thing. So this was a prayer chapel. We often will do these prayer chapels throughout a semester. We probably do 3 or 4 of them a year, maybe. Mm-hmm. And we tend to, this is again, sort of again, from a critique angle, or some of the things I've been observing. I tweeted out the other day, I've been sitting in Christian high school chapels for a decade. And you start to see things, right? And you start to notice patterns. And one of the things that we do in our high school is our prayer chapels are a very particular form of prayer, which are, they're all spontaneous. It's breaking off into smaller groups in our big cavernous chapel space. And oftentimes people will go with their friends and their peers, and I'm not knocking it. There are some, it's observable. You can see meaningful times with students. Like the level of engagement is relatively high. You've always got people who are off not doing it or not, quote, on task, right? They're not actually praying.
And can you blame them to some extent?
No, not at all. And there is music that is played, right? So there's a certain ambiance, there's a certain mood that is set in the room, and this will kind of linger. That's our only mode that will enter into prayer. Mm. And so I, much like a diet, I was sensing that there maybe was a little bit of a deficiency in our diet of prayer as a school community, thinking corporately, thinking what is possible in this space, right? And so I was thinking, we don't do corporate prayer particularly well. And so I just pitched to these guys, they were a group of 3 grade 12 guys who were they were responsible to run this chapel. And I said, what would it look like if we had some element of some of the prayers that were a little bit scripted, so written out, that were thought through thematically, what could we pray for? And so we sort of had these concentric thinking, sort of starting globally, right? Thinking of global issues in the world. And then we kind of like zoomed in on particulars in our own school community. Mm-hmm. The one other thing I'll highlight was, two things actually. One, I suggested, and they took it, is why don't we read and pray scripture? It's something that we tend not to do. Like we sort of compartmentalize that. So we prayed scripture, and they got me to read part of it. So I read from Isaiah, read part of the Psalms, and sort of brought it together. Another teacher prayed, some students read some scriptures. And then this was the coolest thing that happened. This was the most impactful thing. This is the one that really sort of I set in motion, and these guys took it. Is I said, we should think about who are we putting on this platform, or who has the microphone, right? And there are lots of people in our school community who we tend not to center, or maybe they're invisible to us. A lot of our support staff, our custodial staff, caretakers, janitors, grounds crew. And so we had representatives from, they were invited, and they came to our chapel. And one of the student leaders brought them forward, introduced them, and talked about what they did. And then it was like this exchange that I was about to say the congregation, but the chapel, the students got to observe people praying for each other. So our student leader prayed for them, and then the mic was handed over to them. And these men and women who work on our campus prayed for our school community. That to me was the most powerful thing that has happened. Wow. Like this takeaway, like men and women I've known and I talk to, and some of them collect my garbage and others are keeping our grounds clean. And to hear them as in sort of a spiritual authority role of guiding and leading our high school in prayer was just massively impactful for me. I just found it so moving, and the attention was there. Like, I mean, students were highly engaged in that. So it was a wonderful, I hesitate to say a one-off, but it was definitely unique. Like, students, like, there's something different happening here. This is not a normal quote unquote chapel.
What was it that made the students so engaged? Like, what, like, to, in your perspective, other than some things just being different, right?
Yeah, I think that's an important question, because I think a large part of it is novelty. It's just new. It's something we do. You know, if we were in another denominational or school context where that type of thing was normal, then it would, you know, then you'd have to think creatively, right, about how could we break out of our sort of familiar patterns. So I think just the fact that it was new and it was different, but the difference itself is part of it was having voices and people on platform, on stage, who normally aren't there.
Right.
And I think that was a powerful one of people, maybe of expectancy, of not knowing, this is cool, where is this going?
Yeah. Oh, that's very cool. Okay. So, and when you call it a prayer chapel, is it just like, that's all of the above? Like, technically, well, I don't know about high school, but usually there's like a band with worship, guest speaker, dismissal, right?
Right.
So what's the format
this
here?
This took a different form, in that the arc of the sort of the scope of the gathering was dominated by these various modes of prayer. And there was a band. There were two songs that were sung. They were interspersed. One of the things that didn't happen, which, I mean, you can only do so many things. And again, I wanted to be kind of hands off on this. Like, I don't want to script this so much. I would have thought a little bit more about maybe connecting or integrating the words that we're singing. That didn't really happen. Like, they're sort of, I call them plug and play, right? It's just like, well, we'll just plug this song in here.
Yeah.
That could be more intentional. But then again, because I don't want to be just critical, that is familiar to students. Mm. They knew the songs that were sung.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So not everything was new, and I think we have to be careful with that. If you start to tinker with the recipe a little too much, it could be disorienting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is something there with novelty, but then also with singularity, that this is its own thing. Like, it is a unique thing. If you were to do this every week, kind of like you...
Yeah, this would become a new routine.
Not to say that chapel is so formulaic that you like, that's like, okay, we won't do that now for another year because it'll lose its right. punch. But at the same time, there is a cyclical nature to the way that we function, and that's liturgical.
That's liturgy. Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're talking about liturgy. Yeah.
Yeah,
so, which forms us. And so really, in a sense of finding or calibrating that level of what is the same and what is different, what is new versus the continuity. Here I'm, you know, getting into my historical thinking mode, but what is continuing and what is changing?
Yeah.
And if we can, and there is something to that recipe, and there's not, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer.
No, but that's huge.
But yeah. It's huge, and you need to, that's why, I mean, we're talking about chapels here, but that's just in education in general. You can't just take somebody else's curriculum and take somebody else's, you know, or a prepackaged set of lesson plans. It has to fit the shape, the contours of the students you have, or the grade that you have, or know your context, right? You can't pull stuff out of the box.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. So then, okay, so it seems like this was a high engagement chapel. It was a unique chapel. It was, it was a prayer chapel. So what is your metric for student engagement? Or maybe, because like, I know we it's so hard to measure, and it's so hard to even say like, wow, that was a success. Or, but well, mm-hmm. success fail language is also difficult to use sometimes, but like, what are your metrics for success in this context? Or what are your metrics for engagement? Like, maybe you could speak to that.
Yeah, I think you're tapping into a really curious angle of measurement or quantifying spiritual success, spiritual growth on a growth chart.
Yeah.
I think there should be indicators. to an extent there should be indicators, but I don't know what are these metrics, what are these tools. To use prayer as an example, you know, Jesus teaching his disciples how to pray, like, can you quantify, like, how do you quantify, you know, how does it, like, 11 out of 12 of them were paying attention?
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? That's a tricky one. At the same time, in a school context, I think we can speak in the language of, does this, like, filter it through, does this align with our overarching purpose or mission? Is this connected to, this has been a long going thing, and I don't go down this wormhole, but this idea of a theme for the year, right? Like, so maybe chapels shouldn't be one-off events.
Yeah.
Are they actually in the service of furthering? We're talking again off mic about character formation. So I'm actually interested in the aggregate. So a kid who's not engaged in a single chapel or a single activity versus that happening over time, mm-hmm. which is actually a culture. Like, have we created a culture of engagement in the chapel?
Yeah.
As opposed, you know, versus, you know, put your phone away, or, you know, wake up, right? In a single chapel, that to me would be a something we could start to track, or at least reflect on, and be
reflect on.
Are we noticing discernible patterns over time?
Yeah, patterns of engagement or
patterns
investment.
Of engagement, and the language of investment, as you and I've talked. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate that. Yeah, I like the word that you used about indicators. I think maybe metrics isn't quite the right word, but there are indicators of mm-hmm. success. Yeah.
It's almost, yeah, like I almost liken it to a dashboard, right? And think, you know, it's like the check engine light, right? Or just sort of gauge, like, is the thing running? And that requires bigger questions, right? About,
come on,
is the thing running just for running's sake? Are we, you know, you can have a finely tuned engine, but is the vehicle in motion towards something? So that's where I kind of go with, like, I know some people get a little bit leery with, you know, assessment or metrics around spiritual things, but yeah, it's back to patterns and discerning. So yeah, Riley, tell us about middle school. I mean, we were exchanging texts last week when we were planning this episode about us, and we discovered, we were like, hey, we got to talk about chapel, because we had two highlights. So would love to hear about yours.
Yeah, I actually appreciate that you went first, because now I can think about a little bit about indicators of success and then what the vision was going into this. But I resonate with the idea that, similarly to your chapel, it was a unique event. We had a highlight chapel, in my opinion, as well. And I think it came from a number of things, but the sole reason that I felt like I would have wanted to get involved, because like you said, like, you got involved with your prayer chapel. One of the reasons I wanted to get involved was because, for me, there was a lack of an indicator for student engagement and investment. And that came from a traditional Christian practice, I guess you could say, and that's just singing, engaging in what does Brad call it? Musical worship. He has a special
worship
word for
in song.
Worship in song, yeah, because worship transcends
absolutely
music. Yeah. So engaging in worship and song, that's what was missing from our middle school situation. It was quite evident that students preferred to talk, and that was sometimes, on rare occasions, but still on some, louder than the student musicians that were then playing. And that was clearly an indicator of disengagement. That
are you saying that students, so there's, like, describe the scene for me. So there's musicians playing, and what are the students doing?
So yeah, okay, that's a really good point, because we've had a tradition in the middle school of, and this actually dates back to when I attended at the middle school, like, and it was a fun thing, and I don't blame them for engaging that piece of fun or Yeah. And that is to invite people to the front, and that you're standing at the front and you're really close to the musicians. It kind of emulates like concert vibes, which I have mixed opinions about. But at the same time, it was something that people would look forward to in future engagement. But what then happened was that going forward, to be closer to the musicians meant that you could meet your friend from another class. And most of the time, most of the time, what was going on was socialization,
with a soundtrack
up here. Yeah. Socialization with the soundtrack. So just talking to each other, almost just waiting for the music to be over, to some extent. So because of that, there wasn't.
You can't even spiritualize that and say, you know, just some sweet fellowship. You're seeing this actually as a. Something that's deficient or you're trying to fix.
Yeah. What an indicator.
Of
lack of investment.
That's it.
I don't care about this. I'm going to talk to my friend. Gotcha. So, and these are also interestingly, like lots of these students are like, it might be easy to say, well, some of you are non-churched, students, and maybe you're not exposed to this much, but plenty of these students that are just sitting and talking to their friends, they have churched homes, they have church families. Like it's not like it's new to some extent. So I recognized that the space that we were creating was no longer conducive for worship and song, to some extent. And I wanted to see, because I also get that middle school students have a huge fear of many things that are in front of their peers. So singing being one of them, how hard it is to sing in front of your peers as a grade 6, 7, or 8 student. Very difficult. Much easier to talk to your friend. Much easier. Maybe even a little cooler. Mm-hmm. Much easier. So I recognized that we had to combat a sense of fear. And a colleague of mine, we were given the opportunity to lead worship in a chapel. And I just looked at this person and said, like, I want to be intentional here. And maybe, just maybe, if we do this, we'll hear them sing. And that was, so if I want to use the word metric or an indicator, I was desperate to hear voices singing. Mm-hmm. And you could say, well, singing doesn't mean... it doesn't mean you're a Christian, you know what I mean? But like, it shows me, it's an indicator of engagement.
Or it's huge. Could be.
Yeah, it's huge. So to recognize that we, to some extent, starting at zero, many, very, very few students sing. I'm not trying to be like really negative. I'm just trying to state what I am seeing, like facts, that many, many students do not sing. So my colleague and I, we wanted to try and choose songs that were, the vibe we were going for. I sound like such a millennial youth music leader. But the vibe we were going for was contemplative and congregational. Huge emphasis on
beautiful.
Congregational. Yeah. So I was so convinced that there were certain songs we could not sing.
Yeah.
So to be honest, Hillsong Young and Free was off the table. It was. I wanted something with repetition. I wanted something with an easy, like to use poetry, and a simple meter, okay, that could be followed along. So we sang some Matt Maher. We sang some Hillsong United, but Mighty to Save was Laura Story.
Okay, yeah, but I mean, like this is music that is written with the very intention to be congregational.
Yes.
It's not performance driven so much as congregational. So yeah, it's important the selection is going to, like what you're describing, is what is possible, what is not possible with the music that is chosen.
So we needed to pounce on that, I felt, and just hold on to it. And then talking about continuity, congregational singing should be a continuity. And as soon as we start to appeal to novelty in our song choice, we sometimes lose that continuum of students singing because we've now chosen a song that is difficult to sing. It's just plain and simple. Yeah. So because of that, so we pounced on that. And then we also needed to I felt the need to let students know we were taking this seriously, that it wasn't that in the past, it seems like it's been a social event, that actually we have come and set aside this time as a part of our week. It's kind of funny, like we do maybe on Sunday morning, but in our school, we have taken this time for a specific reason. And that is to engage in forms of worship. I'll use plural, because one of them is worship and song, okay? And other of them could be other formative Christian practices, whether that's listening to whoever's speaking and learning and thinking to ourselves, whatever that is. So to begin, we also got liturgical, and we started with a moment of silent prayer to think and to, and I love, I've been praying the Examen recently, which is a beautiful prayer, thinking about thanking God for what has gone well and saying sorry where things have not. So that's how we open things. And I even, I think that there is so much to modeling, especially in the younger years. Well, maybe even the older years too, but I felt like students needed to be, it needed to be modeled how to pray,
yes,
how to stand in silence, and how to sing. So I also taught them how to change your posture in prayer. So I told them.
It's not, like didactic in the best sense of the word. It's instructional.
Yeah, it's not just going to happen and we're just going to wink and hope. But I said, Kate, here's what you can do, students. And these are 11, 12, 13-year-old students. They're not going to, they're afraid out of their socks, okay? And they're not going to do this on their own. So I taught them. I said, just so you know, like as we pray, as we are going to enter into silence, it's going to be silent and it's going to be awkward. And what you can do, because everyone's eyes are going to be closed, you can put your hands out in front of you, just changing your body posture. It's not a magic switch or anything, but you're changing your posture into a place where you're receiving grace and you're listening to what God has to say and you are engaging in prayer. By changing your body posture, you've now almost told your brain, it's prayer time now. Okay.
Yeah.
And we left silence for that. And I even told all the teachers, I said, teachers, could you model this? Just so students, A, can feel a little bit more comfortable.
That's amazing.
And they can see that. So we opened with that. And then we had maybe, I don't know how long silence it was, but I didn't want it to be too long and I didn't want it to be too short, just enough to get their thinking going and their brain speaking to God. And then I prayed a written prayer of confession.
Yeah.
And that is new. In our tradition, we don't do that. And all of a sudden thinking like, oh my goodness, like, yeah, Lord, in my heart, like there are things that I have done and left undone in word, thought, and deed that I would like to confess. And then we jumped into congregational worship.
Yeah, Riley, you are scaffolding developmentally and teaching. I'm going back to, Lord, teach us how to pray. Teach us, students need to be taught how to do these things, and it's by modeling.
Yeah.
And the beautiful thing about this, because we know that the best sort of instruction or teaching, when we talk about teaching and learning in a classroom, right, is that like I'm a learner too. Like as the educator, I'm learning alongside. We, on a theological level, we are worshiping alongside our students.
Yes.
You're guiding. This at its core is modeled, lived discipleship.
Just like how Karen Brevelt said last time, that we're equals.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, isn't that a beautiful thing?
Yeah.
So in modeling, we started our music and I had ears on, right? So and my metric or my indicator was trying to hear them sing, like just dying to hear them sing. And I was listening, and our first song, it was maybe the kids that do sing were singing still, and maybe a couple more voices. But by the end, actually my colleague spontaneously, like while I was just starting the song, she spontaneously spoke out and she just said like, and then she actually, so here is direct instruction to use more educational, edu-speak, to say like, here is where we are. Maybe here is where your heart is in fear. But we're here to sing, and we're going to sing, and we sang the chorus of Amazing Grace last. And she says, let's just sing together this song. And we sang it twice, and by the end, it was just the voices, and it was just this unbelievably beautiful sound of worship and student engagement. Like what a highlight is that?
Oh.
No socialization, no one coming to the front expecting to see their friends, but actually being serious about what it is that we're doing and hearing students engage in worship with our God. It's beautiful.
And we've said before here that a Christian educator there's a pastoral function to this. And
yes,
you were shepherding, there was a pastoring shepherding that was taking place with your 11 and 12 year olds.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. So rich. I mean, now I'll throw the question back to you about the novelty factor of that.
Yeah.
maintaining that going forward, you know, it, these wonderful one-off moments, I can think of my own prayer chapel. Moving forward, what does that look like? Or what's even the hope there?
Well, I would hope that an expectation begins to be set that this, out of respect, like for the students who are Christian and for the students that, that don't identify as Christian, that like, okay, maybe I don't go to church, but I'm actually going to set respect for this area that has been designated for Christian worship. Okay. But at the same time, like the novelty piece, I'm not going to lead worship every week. We have student worship teams. So my goal would be then to continue to foster this idea that we're going to sing, with these people. And then maybe, like, this is kind of funny, like, because at the same time, if me and my colleague were to lead worship every time, that would wear off too. And I don't know, like, I have mixed emotions or feelings about that, but I wouldn't want us to lead worship every week.
No.
So occasionally we will, and I would hope every time that we are, we're going to be just as intentional. And I would actually, if I would go back and think, okay, maybe we're going to do it again next month, I would not change most of the songs. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe I would try and keep two the exact same, to keep that congregational continuity across the board, and then prayer at the beginning, knowing this is what we're doing. It's almost like, okay, maybe this is better instead of novelty, but chapel is novel in itself, that it's its own thing set apart from the week,
right?
Within that timeline of chapels, we have also set apart other chapels for certain things. So maybe the answer is not as much like, okay, how are we going to keep doing this all the time? Because there's ebbs and flows, just like in our liturgical time, there's ebbs and flows. And to say that we just continue to mark out time. So like you said, like you have prayer chapels ever so often, we will have myself and my colleague doing intentional corporate prayer or silent corporate prayer and congregational worship, like set out like on a rotation to some extent. And I know that seems programmed, but
it's at a certain time frame set to a rhythm that just almost jump starts it, right? Or just keeps it going.
Totally.
I see it also as, when you were describing the demonstrating to students what is here, it's about possibility. I think just actually opening up the vista of the horizon line of what is actually possible, right?
Yes.
You're doing that for your colleagues. You're learning from them. You're demonstrating this is possible. I showed students, high school students who are our chapel leaders, what is even possible in this space with when you have some microphones, when you script a little bit of stuff, and then it can go, you know, and it takes on a life of its own.
Yeah. And I think when you talk about opening to the vista, you've talked about spaces being more conducive than others.
Yeah.
So making choices that are conducive. And I think there is agreements and disagreements. Like some people say it's more conducive if you shut all the lights off. Some people say it's more conducive if you don't.
Well, and to throw another angle on that, a lot of that's cultural too, right?
Yes.
So there's the whole dimension there.
But I think as long as we're being intentional there,
yes,
that's what's key.
Yeah, I mean, all of this thoughts floating around in my head here. I mean, I give some credit to where some of that this idea of vistas and possibilities. Andy Crouch, an author, wrote a book called Culture Making, and he speaks of the horizons of possibility. So that's where I'm getting sort of that idea from, this idea of vistas. And I will give a shout out, because I'm going to recommend this episode. David Taylor at Fuller Seminary, who I'm taking his course right now on worship, the formative power of the arts.
Yeah, you are. You're taking
that
course.
So this idea of opening and closing down possibilities, that's we actually inadvertently have been talking about that. This is exactly in that vein, and there are resources and so for people who are listening to us just chattering away about our context, and so for listeners out there, right, if they're thinking about, well, what are we doing in our space? It doesn't have to be a chapel, right? It could be a classroom. What does it look like? There are some resources. There are folks who think very deeply about the formative power of the decisions that we make, because we're like architects, right? Like we're building. You mentioned conducive.
Yeah.
The conduciveness of the space. we have to think about that all the time in our classrooms. And we've been talking about chapel and what's possible with chapel.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks so much for listening to our rants about chapel. I feel encouraged from you, actually, having felt discouraged at the beginning, but...
You know, we go in these, oscillate back and forth. It can set your head spinning. So, no, Riley, I likewise feel massively encouraged.
Oscillate, that's
the word.
Accurate. So I hope you enjoyed this too. Bit of authenticity, but then also just seeking. Like, we really are just driving, trying to seek, what can we do better here? Like, what is it that we can do to make things more conducive to cultivate student investment here? Yeah, it's good stuff. All right, so if you want to learn more, you can find our website, notmanyofyou.com. All the episodes are there.
The whole internet.
Yeah, the whole internet's there. Make sure you subscribe on whatever app you're on, and make sure you give us a 5-star review. That's how people can find us a little bit better. And if you want to get involved or get in touch, the best way is on Twitter at notmanyofyou. Thank you so much for your continued support. Have a good one. Bye-bye.